Good morning, America. This is Eugene B. Colson at Mind Controlled America, or good day, or good afternoon. My guest is the same guest I had last week, Link Alexander. And he wrote a book called Alien UFO Thought Machine. Link, how are you doing today?
I'm fine, Eugene. How are you?
I'm doing very well. And if anybody would like to call into the show and ask either the guests or myself, actually I would like you to ask each of us a question, to be fair. The U.S. call-in number is 877-876-5227. And the Canadian call-in toll-free number is 888-815-9756. Now, Link, last week we were talking about the alien UFO thought process, and it was, you are of the opinion from your research that they're transdimensional, they can walk through walls and so forth.
That's correct.
Well, you know, as I explained to you, that the Greys, at least the Greys and what I saw at Area 51, are biological computers. Now, do you think that it takes a biological computer to do this, or can others do this as well?
Okay. What I'd like to do is just back up to what people see when they see a UFO. All the sightings that I've had, and I've had four, what happens is the UFO just appears. They don't come from a great distance, seen in our telescopes, and slowly get bigger and bigger. They just appear, and they do fantastic maneuvers that are totally beyond what's possible in our physical universe, and then they just disappear. So if we want to analyze what we see, we can say that, okay, why do they just appear? Why don't we see them coming from somewhere? Well, the fact of the matter is they don't come from somewhere in our physical universe. They come from another dimension. They just appear in our dimension. And when they do these fantastic maneuvers that are impossible by our physical universe, for instance, they'll do a dead stop from 4, 5, 10,000 miles an hour. They come to an instant stop. Well, last week I talked about what kind of G-forces are involved in just fairly slow stuff that we can grasp, things that happen within our physical universe. And I'll give you an example. For instance, to fire a 11-pound Sabot round out of the 12-foot barrel of an M1 tank, that puts on a force, and that's only up to 2,400 miles an hour. It puts on a force of 16,041 Gs. Now, okay, 2,400 miles an hour, we say, well, let's stop that projectile instantly, and let's see what happens, if we can. Well, what happens is that projectile hits the side of the armor of another tank, which is, in essence, designed to stop it. But what happens is all that kinetic energy is turned to white heat. The projectile turns white hot. Now, it still hasn't stopped. It has all that kinetic energy. It's now turned white hot, and it keeps on going, and it goes through the armor of the tank. So we can't stop something instantly going 2,400 miles an hour. Well, let's see what happens if we try and stop it in 1 foot. Stop it in 1 foot, instead of trying to stop it instantly, while you try and stop it instantly, it doesn't happen. It just turns white hot. If we try and stop it in a foot, we get 192,500 Gs. That's if we could stop it without it vaporizing or something happening to it. Well, there's so much energy there that has to be dissipated in that foot. That's why you get these colossal G-forces, and the missile, in fact, would vaporize. So what our scientific community is looking at, when they see these incredible 90-degree instant changes of direction, when they see these maneuvers, instant speeds, 4, 5, 10, 50, 30, 40, 50,000 miles per hour instantly, these are G-forces that are way beyond anything possible in our physical universe. We can't create those kind of G-forces, and if we could, well, we can't. There's just no such energy. And not only that, but anything you try to accelerate or stop in those distances instantly at those high speeds would vaporize. So science says UFOs don't exist. For a scientific community, UFOs just aren't. And they think of all kinds of crazy explanations to explain the UFO, something that we can understand in the physical universe. Like these are lights flashing around, they're magnetic disks, or you name it, or any number of explanations that really don't fit. So if we're looking for an explanation to what we see, then we say this does not belong to our physical universe. They can't.
Have you ever thought of the possibility that with those UFOs you might be dealing with, other than our dimension, two or more dimensions, like the UFOs operating in dimension, and the fact that there is no damage via the G-forces, even in another dimension, that those in the UFO might even be in another dimension themselves?
Well, that's precisely, you got that right, Eugene. That is precisely the explanation for the UFO.
We got three dimensions going on at the same time.
Well, they come from another dimension. And so what we want to try and do is understand that other dimension, and that understand it enough to explain their behavior. Okay, for instance, we can go to another dimension. So if we can do that, that means the alien can come here. For instance, people, while they're fully alive, can detach their consciousness from their body. It's called astral projection. All kinds of people do it. There's literally hundreds and hundreds of books on how to do it. So we can detach our consciousness, and we can go to that other dimension, the astral dimension. And when we go there, it has certain properties. Now, when we understand something of the properties of the astral dimension, then we know why the UFOs can do what they can do. Because in the astral dimension, pardon me, you can travel anywhere instantly simply by using your thought. Any place that you think of you want to go, you can go simply as a thought process. And you can take yourself there. Humans do it with their astral. Now, the aliens do it with their physical. And we have examples of that where we have incursions into the other dimension with our physical bodies. And in the book, I detail a number of these, but one that I would like to talk about is Uri Geller.
Before you get there with Uri Geller, why don't you give us your contact information on how to get your book, if the listeners would like to get one?
Okay.
Or in the case of those that are astral projecting, the remote viewers dealing with this show right now.
Okay. The name of the book is UFOs, Alien Thought Machines. And my website is www.linkalexander.com, simply my name.com. And in there is some more information on the book and how to order it and so on. Or you can go to BookLocker, who is the publisher, and simply type in UFOs, Alien Thought Machines. And the BookLocker gives you the fastest service to order the book. Now, getting back to Uri Geller, the reason I use him as an example of our crossovers sometime into the astral dimension is he was jogging down the streets of New York, and he vanished. And he appeared instantly later, crashing through the porch of Andrei Puharich, who is a PhD, who was examining and studying Uri Geller for his psychic abilities. And this was 33 miles away, and that was an instant translocation. Now,
well, too bad he wasn't running the marathon.
Yeah, he would have done it instantly. Well, this is an example of our physical crossovers into the astral dimension. The aliens have mastered doing it from, they are physical, just like us. No mistaking there. The aliens have shown themselves, their ships, their UFOs, They're flying saucers, whatever we want to call them, are very, very physical, just like our physical life here on Earth. But they have mastered the use of the astral dimension. They can go in and out of it at will. And they actually operate when we see them, and they're here on Earth. They're actually operating in two dimensions at once. They're operating in our physical dimension, but at the same time, they're also operating in the astral dimension and possess the qualities that they have in the astral dimension, which is, when they take human abductees out of their homes, they take them out through the walls. They don't have to open the doors or open windows or anything else. They take people out through the walls or through their car or whatever. So they have converted the abductee now into an astral entity, even though they're in the physical. Okay, so now, another one of the properties of the astral dimension is indestructibility. A person who projects their astral out of their physical body into the astral dimension, their astral entity is indestructible. It can pass through physical objects. It could pass through the nuclear fires of a sun and not be damaged. Excuse me. So this indestructibility, this ability to think yourself anywhere in an instant travel physically, the fact that you can pass through anything also means that anything can pass through you. So our bullets and our rockets and everything we've tried to do to UFOs, and there have been instances where we have tried to shoot them down, doesn't mean anything because our physical objects simply pass through them.
Well, I've heard Dr. Rand on and so forth, and I have seen classified pictures of UFOs that were shot down during the Second World War in Germany and in England. So different ones have theorized that they have a generator and that causes this to happen, and possibly when that generator went offline, we may see them or the ship malfunctioned to the point to where it was shot down.
Well, this is where I very much disagree with what we think we have as physical evidence. I don't believe we have any. Excuse me. I don't believe we have any physical evidence. The UFO, as an astral entity, we can't touch it. We can't damage it. It can vanish out of our physical universe in an instant. And I think there, I was just reading about the case where this American pilot actually flying a Sabre, an F-86D model, I think. He just revealed that he was ordered to fire all his missiles at a UFO even before he got in the air. And I'm just trying to think of his name. I just read this. This just came out recently. And when he saw it on his radar, he said, my God, this thing's the size of an aircraft carrier. Anyway, he was getting ready to fire, and the thing instantly vanished. So these are the characteristics of the aliens in the astral dimension. They can appear in our universe, and they can disappear out of our universe in an instant, and it's all done by thought. And the astral dimension is thought-controlled, and that's one of the reasons for the title of my book, UFOs, Alien Thought Machines. The astral dimension is a dimension where things are controlled by thought. Now, they're still physical. They're physical just like us. But when you take on the characteristics of the next dimension, then you take on totally different characteristics, even though you can appear in our physical universe. And this is a lot of what we see. But don't also forget, when they want to, and this is what you just talked about, maybe the failure of a particular generator or whatever, when they're sitting, say, on the ground, they're definitely physical. Or when they abduct people and they're inside them, they're most definitely physical. Well, people have shot at UFOs sitting on the ground, and they hear a metallic clang. So you know that the thing is made of some kind of metal. But also when abductees come on board, They definitely feel all the probing instruments that, the aliens use to examine their bodies and so on and so on, and the various procedures they do to create their alien-human hybrids. And also people lay on very, very physical tables. The aliens that touch the humans are most definitely physical. In every respect, they are physical just like us, but they take on another dimension while they're here, either because they're in that dimension or by choice, and they can also move in and out of our dimension at will. And
well, there's quite a bit of evidence. The Roswell crash. I did see one of the survivors when I was 9, and it did walk through walls, and that was on a second floor. But I was raised in a ritual abuse background. And my experience with them, it's heavily involved in devil worship. Now, if for the Roswell crash to take place, if what you're saying is correct, then it would have had an across-the-board failure or distraction from the equipment and the beings themselves to happen.
Well, like I say, I'm at odds with that one because UFOs have been seen to fly through aircraft.
I have seen that on shows. I have talked to people who have seen that, yes.
Yeah. Pilots have reported that. And abductees tell us a huge amount about what the aliens can do about their spaceship, what it's about, how they're treated when they're on board, and so on. The interesting thing is when we see these incredible maneuvers, instant stops, instant starts, 90-degree changes of direction, shooting across the entire horizon in 1 second, that type of thing. I've seen that. That there are aliens and humans on board while they're going through all of this.
Unless it's a probing device, which is usually described about the size of a basketball or smaller, which I've seen a yellow and orange one simultaneously right beside themselves. Me and another individual saw it at the same time while driving in a car at night.
And well, we see pretty fantastic things because in the astral dimension, you can do virtually anything. Firstly, you can be any size you want. You can be any shape you want. The aliens shapeshift quite frequently when they present themselves to humans. We see a lot of different-looking aliens. And there's a real question as to whether or not we're just seeing the grays that are shape-shifting themselves into various other forms, or whether we're actually seeing different alien civilizations or societies that come here. The general consensus seems to be that there are about 10 different alien societies visiting us, just from the description of the aliens themselves, although this could be deceptive because of their ability to change shape or size or whatever in the astral dimension.
Well, why do you think the government is constantly working to try to cover this type of thing up? And it's not just our government, it's all the major governments.
Well, of course, you know, that makes for a lot of conspiracy books and theories as to what, who knows what, and who knows what anybody's telling anybody, and so on. My book is based purely on the fact that I know something about the astral dimension, astral projection. I know about the dimension. I've been a student of the esoteric all my life. I've studied psychic abilities and our paranormal states, what we can do, and so on. So I know about the characteristics of the astral. And when you examine the performance and what you see of the UFO, and this is very straightforward that anybody will see when they have a sighting, and most people that have a sighting, I'm sure, that they will report that it just appeared. The UFO just appeared out of nowhere, so to speak, performs incredible things as some people have described. They do things that airplanes can't do, and then they just vanish, or they'll shoot across the entire horizon. Just almost instantly, you just see this incredible flight that lasts a second or two, just unbelievable speed. And what we also have to know that when they're doing speeds like this, they don't burn up. And we know that anything entering the atmosphere, even at a slow speed like 18,000 miles an hour, the Challenger burned up as it entered the atmosphere at a slow speed of 18,000 miles per hour. Well, how can you travel through our atmosphere with speeds recorded on radar of over 40,000 miles per hour without burning up? That means they're in a different state. They're not physical as we know it in this universe, but they are physical in the astral dimension. So they are doing things in two dimensions at once. And I talk about this at length in the book. We do those things by accident sometime, like Uri Geller. We do it intentionally. I've also detailed individuals who can instantly translocate themselves by intent. So we make occasional crossovers into this dimension, both mentally with our astral body and physically with our physical bodies. There are people who can do it, and I do cover these people in the book.
Now, can you remote view yourself?
I have done this on several occasions.
Have you ever done it and ended up in one of these alien crafts?
No, I have not.
Why don't you tell us a little about your experience when you have done it?
Well, my ability in this respect is quite limited. For one, it's very, very difficult to do. It's difficult for someone like me who doesn't practice it all the time. I know the procedures, I know what to do, and I've been out several times. But my trips out of my body have been very short, because when I come to the realization that this is actually happening and have that consciousness of now having passed out of my body and being outside and so on, the few times that I've done it, I didn't get away from my body fast enough and got hauled back in again. And this is typical. Once you get out, you have to separate yourself from your body by at least about 25 feet before you're not liable to be pulled back into your body again. Now, I have seen my astral. I've projected it out quite a few times, and I've seen it, the very, very pale blue color that it is with all the sparkling dots on it and so on. But I'm not an accomplished psychic in terms that I can travel to the other dimensions easily and at will. Now, there are many books written by people who can, who do this on a regular basis, and I think Robert Monroe in the Monroe Institute, he talks about his journeys quite a bit, and the one I recommend the most for people who are interested in astral projection is Robert Bruce in his book, Astral Dynamics. He describes several techniques for astral projection and, in fact, what you can do once you're out. Now, like I say, I've practiced this. The first time that I got out of my body, I had to work at it for several months without any results. And that's what Robert Bruce talks about in his book. There are exercises that you can do to help you get out. But you'll end up doing these exercises for a very long time without results. And then one day it just happens. But it's not an easy thing to do, but there are lots of people who do it. I wish I could tell you more about my experiences out, but they've been brief. And I haven't, like I say, I'm not an accomplished psychic or mystic.
Well, one warning I might give to the listeners that there's a dark side to everything, and quite a few people who get into the occult attempt that are playing with demonic realms that really want to destroy them. And I'm not going to say that's the case in every case, but quite often people get hooked into this stuff, and then it's like a drug addict. It's a downward progression. They start out with pot and cocaine and rock cocaine. And
Well, what I want to say in that respect is, there are inhabitants of the astral realm. There's no question about that. Permanent inhabitants. And they can give you a difficult time. They can try and scare you. They can do all kinds of things. But what you have to remember is that in our astral, we are indestructible, and also we possess a lot more energy than the astral entities that live there do. We can easily simply knock them out of the way or simply overpower them with size and ferocity or whatever. We can change ourselves to any size, shape. We have a lot more energy than they do. We can overpower them and simply ignore them. We can also leave that realm by simply pointing ourselves upward and shooting up at a tremendous speed to enter a different realm away from those astral entities. And that's, that's common knowledge to people who astral project.
Well, Einstein and those thinkers like that, you know, we're like so many trillions of atoms vibrating at one level and, you know, constantly in motion. So what you're saying, there's a possibility that these ETs and other individuals can change the vibration of their physical entities.
That's exactly what they do. They change from one frequency, the frequency of our universe, to another. And with the aliens, when they're in the astral dimension, they're vibrating at a far, far higher rate of vibration than the vibration of our physical universe. And that's exactly what we do when we project our astral out of our body and go into the astral dimension. Our astral vibrates at a far, far higher frequency than our physical universe. So these are two different universes vibrating at very different frequencies. But the interesting thing is that the aliens, with their huge heads and their massive eyes they have learned to operate in both our dimensions at the same time. And like I say, occasionally we do crossovers with our physical body. But the aliens do this as a matter of course. They do it all the time.
But well, it might be limited because, as I explained to you in 2003, when I took down a whole facility by gassing it, when the scientists showed me how to take it down, being stupid enough to do it, I was in the control room. And there were hundreds of these things, the little grays, which are biological supercomputers, at least the ones there, banging on the windows trying to get into the control room, and they couldn't. So I don't, you know, maybe there's different forms of them or something. I don't know, but all I know is what I saw.
Okay.
And at that point in time, they did not go through, nor they could they, or they would have.
Okay, well, there are a lot of things that you talk about, and I've read that other people talk about and so on, which I really know very little about have not investigated in my readings to any great degree. What I have looked at is the reports from various psychiatrists who have studied, interviewed people that have been abducted. For instance, John E. Mack, M.D., Edith Fiore, Ph.D., David Jacobs, Ph.D., and so on. These are psychiatrists who have interviewed abductees, literally hundreds and hundreds of them. And most of the information they get is through hypnosis because the aliens are erase the conscious memories of the abduction. Now, there are a few people who remember the entire abduction where the memory has not been erased or they have overpowered it or whatever. So that has been the extent of my research into the aliens themselves and what the abductees have to say about it and so on, is what these psychiatrists have, the information they've gotten from the abductees through these interviews and so on. And that's another reason to suspect that maybe all of these different shaped aliens that people are seeing could be grays that have shape-shifted. And the reason I think that, or the reason other people think that, is that seems to be the most consistent contact with aliens, are the grays, and there's the smaller grays and slightly taller ones who seem to be in charge of everything. But also, these grays have enlisted humans to help them, or at least this is what abductees see.
Well, you know, I'm a victim of CIA, MKUltra, Operation Monarch, mind control. And I went through 4 years of hypnotherapy. I didn't remember any of the Area 51 stuff at that time, but I was just recovering repressed memories. In my case, I was used mainly as an assassin, military special ops operator. And most of the people, the vast majority of the people, in fact, all of them that I've talked to that claim to be abducted, and I don't doubt that some of them are victims of the same CIA mind control. That's been my experience.
Okay. Well, again, these are areas that I haven't read about or explored. My information, the research that I base my book on is my own knowledge of the paranormal, of the astral dimension, and what I read about what the abductees tell these various interviewers. And what seems to be the case is that by far the greatest contact that we have with aliens are the Greys. No one in any of these interviews that I have read reports being in contact with some of the other aliens as they're described. Now, some describe beings that are 8 or 9 feet tall, et cetera, and various shapes and so on and so on, having huge ears and a lot of other descriptions. And yet the consistent description of the Greys is, firstly, it's very consistent. Abductees report seeing virtually the same thing. And they have the big eyes, the big heads, and they have no ears, tiny dots for a vestigial nose and a tiny slit that never moves for a mouth. And this is very consistent as to what people see. And, of course, communication is by telepathy. So people don't report being examined or probed or investigated or touched or any other contact with any other aliens other than those. And so that leads a lot of people to doubt that perhaps we're only really being visited by the Greys as we know them. But then there are other indications that there may be other societies visiting us. For instance, there are some very distinctive UFOs that don't seem to change shape and that are quite consistent, like the big black triangles that are seen, the big black boomerangs that are seen, very distinctive from the black triangles, and, of course, the disc, the saucer-shaped disc, but which takes on a lot of different forms because, again, they can shape-shift their vehicles or themselves or whatever. There are a number of classifications of UFOs, and this seems to be mostly the basis of saying there's about 10 different societies visiting us because of these consistent shapes of giant UFOs or whatever we're seeing, like I say, the boomerangs or the black triangles or the discs and so on. Now, there are other descriptions of people seeing aliens, but how many different ones are here, that's quite a bit of speculation. A lot of writers seem to think there's around 10. But again, the only real contact seems to be with the Greys.
Have you talked to anyone yourself that claims to be abducted and interacted other than myself?
Yes. Yes, I have.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, again, the fellow that I talked to, he showed me two interesting round little dots on his chest. Actually, more than little dots. These looked like excavations that were pieces were taken out of the skin about half an inch in diameter. And there was two of them up on his left side, up near his shoulder, just on the top of his chest muscle. And these two round excavations, which I call them, he said they weren't there before his UFO sighting. Well, what the typical abductee sees that they remember is they'll see the UFO, and sometimes they don't. When they see the UFO, conscious memory stops shortly afterward. Then what they see next is the UFO departing. Now, what's happened in between is the abduction. Now, they'll know that if they have signs on their body that weren't there before, like this particular individual, or they have missing time. They realize that an hour and a half to 2 hours or some time has passed. These are typical signs of an abduction. And in this case, this individual that I talked to, that's exactly what he saw. He saw the UFO on the ground as he was driving, and he was drawn to it. He parked, and that's as much as he remembered at the beginning. Then he remembers being in his car and the UFO flying away. Now, also, nobody else in the vicinity saw it. Only he saw it. Now, that may be a believable tale or not, but when you see these two chunks of skin that were taken out of his body, and that's certainly not a surgical procedure that he had undergone. Well, he knows that. And he knows that these two marks on his body weren't there prior to the abduction. And, of course, he consciously remembers seeing the UFO and then seeing it fly away.
He doesn't remember what happened on the craft itself?
No, he doesn't remember anything in between. And I'm saying to him, hey, go and get hypnotized. Find out. I'd be dying of curiosity. But he's afraid to do it. And that's very typical, lots of times, of abductees.
Was he paranoid in any way?
Is this fellow paranoid?
Yes.
Well, he's a pretty well normal-looking individual, near as I can tell. But, of course, what's fascinating are these two marks on his body. And, what he says is typical of what most abductees see. They see the beginning and they see the end, and they don't remember what's in between. And, of course, I'm trying hard to coach him into getting hypnotized, but he won't do it. He's afraid to find out what happened in between.
Well, you know, if you want to give him my personal telephone number, go ahead and do that, because I went through 4 years of hypnotherapy. And the only way anybody can get you to do something you don't want to do under hypnosis, it takes a little while to learn how to be hypnotized, is they have to use drugs. So just somebody talking to you in most cases, unless it's a government operative that's working in one of the programs, there's nothing to fear.
Well, which is true, and a lot of people find that they have a great relief after they're able to talk about their experience, because many people have bad dreams or nightmares, or they have these recurring thoughts that keep coming in, and of course they know that something's happened to them, or they think that something has happened to them, but they may be afraid to face it. But most abductees, when they eventually face what's happened to them, feel quite relieved.
Well, any time you get hypnotized because of a mind control victim, you have all this pent-up emotion, fear, anger, hate, disgust. Once you realize what has happened, it's a relief valve for that, and it's like a pressure cooker inside your brain. You know, when the steam goes out, you have some relief.
Yeah. There's another fellow that I'm going to meet shortly who claims he's been abducted, and I'll be interested in listening to him. And I've also talked to quite a few people that have seen UFOs, but maybe like myself, they've seen them at a distance. I don't have any thoughts that I may have been abducted at all. All my UFO sightings have been at a distance, nothing up real close. And I don't have any indications of an abduction like people commonly get. So I don't think it's happened to me.
That's not to say it didn't, or that they've done a routine on you, because most people never remember. Very few remember.
Typically what happens is the aliens will decide who they're going to abduct at a very early age. And abductions start generally as early as age 3.
And that's usually the time that they, on the mind control level, that's when they usually start. They usually start before the age 5.
Yeah. And the aliens have decided who they're going to abduct. And the abductions start early. And in these early abductions, the child plays with the aliens. The aliens are very friendly. They're not into the business of what the abductions are all about. Which is, later on in life, the people who are abducted, male or female, they'll be used to get the women's eggs and the male sperm to create the embryos, which are then modified to create the alien human hybrids.
Or the greys themselves, for that matter.
However they do it or whatever they do. And maybe, but this is what people have come to realize, is that over their lifetimes, they're abducted many times, and that they're used for the purpose of creating these babies. And this, by and large, this is what the aliens are using us for. They don't need us for technology. They don't need us for anything that we have, except they're using our bodies to create the babies that the aliens want. Now, what most abductees say, that these appear to be human-alien hybrids, rather than just greys or what look like the aliens themselves. They have some human qualities, but mostly alien qualities. And this is the purpose that we are serving for the aliens. They don't do any harm to the abductees. Well, when I say harm, people are abducted, which means they're taken against their will right off the bat. But if people have serious illnesses, they're cured. They don't do any physical damage to the person, although there may be a little bits of skin or implants put in and so on, or bits of skin taken as samples and so on and so on. But by and large, they treat the humans that are abducted very, very well. And
I've heard too many countless cases where they describe the whatever they're doing to them is torturous.
Well, that's true. And they erase those memories. There are a lot of procedures performed on the humans that just are not related to creating the hybrids. They do a lot of other experiments on humans, and one of them is correct, that they have put humans through intense pain to the point of passing out. And when the abductees say, "Why are you doing stuff like this to me?" The aliens simply say that we need to find these things out, and that's all they'll say. They know us to a far greater degree than we know ourselves. They are able, with their eyes, to look into our eyes and literally take everything out of our minds that they want. They can experience our experience in total. They can take out our emotions. They can take out our hates, our prejudices, our loves, our adventures, everything about us they can take out of us with their eyes. And not only that, but they can transmit everything that they take out of us to other aliens. In other words, they can live the human adventure.
My experience with all this is from a satanic ritual abuse shadow government routine. And, you know, I know this is an area we've talked about, but I want to throw it out there that might be an explanation for what you just said. I've discussed it with others. Is that these are, my experience is these are biologic supercomputers. And there is a spirit world, and there is a devil, and there are demons that want to destroy us. And my belief is quite often they inhabit these things, and they can interact with our minds and do it that way as well.
Well, it doesn't seem likely that they're supercomputers. They communicate by telepathy. Now, whether supercomputers could do that or not, I have no idea, because our technology is pretty fantastic, and it'll get far more fantastic as the ages go on. We'll be able to do some pretty incredible things. But the fact is that they communicate by telepathy, which, of course, is very much a mind thing. They have these very large heads. And they're humanoid in shape, you know. They have head, neck, shoulders, torso, arms, legs, etc., feet.
Three fingers and one thumb.
Yeah, they're humanoid. If you're going to create a supercomputer, there's no point in making it humanoid. I mean,
well, if they're creating a supercomputer, they start out as human, but with DNA and heavy metals and diseases and viruses, they create a biological supercomputer by the heavy metals attaching to these proteins, you know, at a microbiologic level. And that's how I've seen them create these supercomputers. And that's why I'll stick with that one. But, you know, I'm not here to debate you. Just throw out a few thoughts here and there.
Yeah. No, and I'm not either. I'm listening to what you have to say, and like I say, a lot of what you have to present is something I'm not familiar with, so I can't, you know, discuss your point of view not being familiar with it. The only thing that I'm familiar with are my sightings, of course, and analyzing what I've seen and relating it to the next dimension, the astral dimension, because all of UFO performance fits into that, and it fits it perfectly. And what I do in the book is relate how we make these transitions on occasion into the astral dimension, not only with our consciousness, but also physically. We have crossed that border a number of times, and there are people who can do it at will, which I discuss in the book. And, of course, one of the interesting experiments was the Philadelphia experiments, where a machinery was set up, which, now, according to all the stories, now, of course, like a lot of things, no photographic evidence to support it and all the rest, just a lot of anecdotes, that the ship actually disappeared, instantly translocated to another port a couple hundred miles away, and then came back. So if the Philadelphia experiment is true, then it's a case of we've done it with not only with our physical bodies, but we've also done it with a machine, a ship, just the way
it's aliens Tesla do. Coil generators, which I told you and mentioned last week, is I've been in an F-117G, which can do that as well, but you can't take it very long. You get an instant migraine, and if you run it too long, you can die.
Well, the funny thing is you can buy that equipment. You can go to these psychic shops that have equipment for all these experiments, and you can buy the equipment that conducted the Philadelphia experiment, much, of course, reduced in size, something for you to do personally. I wouldn't try it, but...
I wouldn't recommend it either.
But
put enough power to that thing, it's either going to blow up or screw something up.
Well, the stuff is available, and that's, to me, that's tampering with something that I wouldn't want to touch. If I'm going to astral project, I'll do it naturally and not have something that's going to take my physical body somewhere where I'm not sure where it's going to go.
Had you had a chance to look up Al Beeman and get his story since last week?
No, I haven't, but I've got it written down. I'm going to be doing that.
The listeners, Al Beeman claims to be part of the Philadelphia experiment.
Yeah, that's what you were saying, yeah.
Incredible story, and I checked it with my reverse speech machine when I had a whole tape program on the Art Bell show from years ago, and the reverse speech thing is the best lie detector there is, and either the man is crazy, he's brainwashed, but he totally believes it, or it's real.
Well, you know, I just don't know what to say about stuff like that. You know, there's of course the book on it, and I'm certainly will be interested in his story. I'd like to hear what he has to say. And of course, that whole thing, according to the book and so on, that was with the destroyer USS Eldridge, was done in 1943. And then it was conducted again offshore with a couple of ships alongside photographing what happened. And the interesting thing is, according to the whole account of this, is out at sea when they were doing this, the first thing that happened is the ship was enveloped with this green fog. And this green fog is very typical of preceding a lot of events in the Bermuda Triangle. And I found that fascinating. Because there's obviously something very mystical and paranormal that goes on in the Bermuda Triangle on many occasions.
Don't a lot of people claim to be abductees say that there's a green fog inside the ship as well?
Well, this green fog comes up quite often in stories of abduction, stories of what happens in the Bermuda Triangle, and I discuss the fog in the book because this is one of the methods, well, they call it the cloud. This is one of the methods by which humans can create material objects out of this energy, and it's often called the universal energy. And this is where we're at the beginnings of doing what the aliens can do. We summon this energy with our eyes, and then we're able to control it with our mind to get it to do certain things. Now, we are just at the beginning of this eye-mind power to manipulate energies. Now, the aliens have huge eyes and huge brains, and their eye-mind power far, far, far exceeds ours. They can do anything they want with it. And we can do some pretty fantastic things, even with our limited power in this respect. And I discuss this in the book, and where we are going in our evolution, we're heading exactly down the same path. If we don't annihilate ourselves, we will end up over time looking a lot like the aliens, with much bigger eyes and much larger brains and so on, because we're on that path. We're heading there. And because we can do certain things, we can expand our minds through logic and say, hey, the aliens, because they're farther along that evolutionary path than we are, let's look at what they can do. And they can, I discuss all of this in the book, of course, the things they can do are what we'll be able to do in time if we let ourselves, if we don't destroy ourselves in the meantime.
Well, the scientists at Area 51, when I was there in 2003, I said, where did they come from? They said they came from possibly pre-flood man, like the asteroid belt beyond Mars and Mars itself, and then were here before the flood and went into hyperstasis. Now, I've talked with scientists and biological doctors, and they've analyzed what they thought was pre-flood man and feel that they were mostly similar, but genetically different. And it's my take that they genetically altered themselves. I'm not so much into the evolution thing, but I'm just throwing that out there from my experience.
Well, I'm going by logic and observation and extending what we can do to what the aliens can do. Our consciousness lets us do certain things. And that's, when I say that, that's the miracles, as I say, that we can do in the book are done by people who are very, very, very highly consciously developed. The consciousness is at a very high state, and they have a very high degree of psychic ability. Now, that's, while all of us have some degree of that and have some degree of psychic ability, we don't use it, we don't practice it, so we lose it. Now, there are humans who work at it, who can do incredible things. Now, as a society, we're slowly heading there, very, very slowly on our way there. It may take us many more tens of thousands of years to get there. Whether or not we give ourselves that chance remains to be seen. But the aliens are there, and that's another thing I talk about in the book. Now, we have a universe roughly 13.7 billion years old, and when you look at the numbers of technological societies that could have arisen and have come and gone, for instance, Dr. Paul Horowitz, University of Chicago, he speculates that if societies, technological societies have arisen at a constant rate, and have lasted 1,000 years, come and gone, and lasted 1,000 years, then in the life of our universe, just in our galaxy, 12 billion technological civilizations would have risen and gone, and 1,000 would be in existence today. So that tells you that science gives very much credence to that there is life out there. There's life in the universe. The mathematical odds for it are just overwhelming. There's roughly 100 billion stars similar to our sun in our galaxy alone. And out of the 100 billion, now we're not talking 100 million, we're talking 100 billion stars similar to our own. So there have to be many, many, many planets in the life zone where life could develop and where there's sufficient time for life to develop. And with this tremendous number of technical societies coming to life and then going extinct, and over the 13.7 billion years, there's only 10 that have made it to the very, very highest state of consciousness, to where they can use the astral dimension and the physical dimension to the point where they can come and visit any society they want in the galaxy. So, of course, a huge question arises as to why, out of literally billions of possibilities, why only 10 are coming to visit us? And that, again, is speculative. That 10 is speculative because the only real contact that abductees talk about, and having exposure on their tables and inside their spaceships and having things done to them and so on, the only real contact is with the Greys. So, you know, even 10 societies visiting us is still speculation. The only contact is with one.
Well, in Israel, there are numerous sightings in 2003, which is interesting, the same year I was there, Area 51, where there were numerous spottings of the seven-foot-tall with the football head that did interact, and about half of the country saw the UFOs, half of Israel.
Well, there are, so, you know, it seems to be, or at least that's the thought, that there could be about 10 societies visiting us. And again, though, that is nothing compared to the technological societies that have come and gone in the time of our galaxy, the time of our universe. So, one of the questions I ask in the book, and I offer some ideas, is to why so few? And when you look at the tremendous capability of the aliens and how hugely advanced their consciousness is, you can see that very few societies will get there. It's kind of like the flip that it took from single-celled creatures on Earth, which was the life form on Earth for the longest time. They didn't go multicellular and start into an explosion of development until only 700 million years ago. And considering that life started on Earth shortly after its creation, 4 billion years ago, there are some kind of flips or changes that take place that in the development of life. And one of the big changes that seems to be rare in the universe is this change from a technological society to a spiritual society. We are a technological society, and I think many have come and gone. To make the change from a technological society to a spiritual society, which is what you need to travel interstellar, intergalactic, do what the aliens are doing, they have to make the change to a spiritual society. That seems to be a very, very, very rare phenomenon, because... And the evidence is there. There's very few societies coming here to see us out of billions and billions of possibilities. And this is something I discuss at length in the book also.
Why don't you give your contact information one more time, Link?
Okay. The book is UFOs, Alien Thought Machines. My website is linkalexander.com, and the link spelled L-I-N-C. And the best place to order it is from Book Locker. They're the publisher. And that's just a matter of going there and typing in the title, UFOs, Alien Thought Machines.
Well, of all the abductions, if we were to go through this thought process, then why would they have to use us to recreate themselves?
Well, that is a very, 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 very interesting question. Now, I also speculate about this in the book, is with their incredible power of their minds, they could create whatever they wanted. They wouldn't have to use humans to create babies. So there must be some reason for them doing it, which at this point I certainly don't understand. And one of the, of course, a friend of mine asked me who read the book. He says, now, why would they use humans? Same question if you just asked, to create these hybrids. And my only thought is perhaps the embryo has to be in a real live soul-carrying entity, a person, who carries a soul, perhaps that's what's needed to give the embryo a soul, their astral or their being or their consciousness or whatever we want to call it. That's my only thought on that topic is maybe that's why there has to be a living entity involved in this process.
Well, which also could fit in with the scenario I described earlier. And I would be very, you know, when you talk to these individuals, feel free to give them my phone number that claim to be abducted. I'd very much like to talk to them. And with that thought, I want to thank you for being on the show, Mr. Alexander.
Well, my pleasure, Eugene.
And we'll do it again someday. This is Eugene B. Colson at Mind Controlled America, signing off.